previously on Worlds Away.
We're playing chess on a physical chessboard that we've seen before.
And I think we're a couple of games in.
So how is being home? Does it always smell like this?
Think of that, he cracks a smile. Not when people are around.
Mr. Hines, Mr. Baydock, I just wanted to let you know that we're a few minutes away from dropping out into orbit around Satis.
It's good to see you again, Mara. Arno and I are just landing.
I'm so excited to see you two. It's truly been too long.
So I think maybe we just see the stairs come down and we see Leela step down.
Mm-hmm.
How do the other three of you react as you see this from a distance? How does the mood change?
I think my hand on both Mara and Arno's shoulders goes from like a light just sort of laying there to like holding them.
Yeah, I think Mara's face like shifts from like warm joy or appreciation to something probably more business neutral.
You see a person with light tan skin, a sharp chin, and a sort of pixie cut mid-length of hair that's dyed copper toward the end. And this is something that you haven't seen in a long time, but you recognize them as Dr. Sen.
It's good to see you again, Doctor. What can you tell us so far?
Best guess is that this is a bridge between two different areas of space-time.
So, it's a wormhole?
In a manner of speaking, that's one possibility.
Councilwoman Gladwell, if I recall correctly, there is rather in-depth surveillance located in the Satis security offices. Is it possible for me to get access to those security systems?
There is one other piece of this. The woman they found here is named Leela Dallin. She's in stable condition, but still hasn't regained consciousness.
I was reading over the notes. I believe I may be able to help.
The reality of the situation means that we might need to make necessary compromises. However, that doesn't mean being naive or ignorant.
I agree. I don't intend to shake her hand.
Neither do I. But what I have to say, I only want to say once. So I'll wait for her to be here to hear it.
We see a large open room, but just like the last time you did this, when you tried to index with Nadia, we hear the sounds of distant thunder from outside of your studio. What does Leela do as she enters this space?
I think she reaches towards the wall for a doorknob, just like expecting that it will appear. And it'd be really fucked up if you don't make a door appear right now.
I think you do that, and I think it's maybe it's very exploratory, and we just see you kind of reaching out your hand and touching the wall. But I think as you do that and as you step forward toward it and reach out your hand, you actually hear a voice from near one of the columns in the room behind you. And the child says, "Well, are you coming?" Welcome to Worlds Away, an actual play storytelling podcast. I'm your game master, John Ossip, and here with me, we've got Haley Daria.
I was the cliffhanger.
You were the cliffhanger. Lauren Wilbanks.
I had a cliffy.
No, you didn't. It was my cliffhanger.
It's not what I mean.
Michael Mouse.
Kind of want a cliff bar.
And Moshtar.
Nobody told me about the cliff thing, so I wasn't
Clifford the
ready.
Big Red Dog.
All right. At the end of the last episode, before we cut away to show Leela in the landscape, we had seen Mara, Arno, and Nasir approach the Office of Public Safety, where they were all confronted by Randall Lawrence, who walked out of the office. And I think in the last shot of that scene, he had said to you, "Where's the other one?" And I think that all of you know that he is referring to Leela.
I thought this was more of a dramatic exposition.
Rhetorical. Well,
apparently not.
I think there's probably definitely an exchange of glances between the three of them while they figure out what could possibly be said and whomstives among them should be the one to do it. And I think the eyes might land on Nasir.
He is the talker.
Get in there, face.
It's good to see you again, Councilman Lawrence. If you're referring to Miss Malik, we are not currently working together, though I suspect it is the intention of the council that we do so soon. And last we saw her, she was headed towards the patient from the anomaly.
I think when you say that, his glance narrows, especially at the part where you said that you're not currently working together. And I think he says, last time she was here, she caused problems. If she's going to see Ms. Dallin at the hospital, what is it that she's trying to do there?
Councilman, I think you're going to have to ask her that yourself. None of us have spoken to Miss Malik for more than a moment in years.
I think you see his eyes kind of move across the three of you, but then he lets out a breath. It's not a sigh, it's just a exhale. And he says, maybe I'll do that next. But what exactly are the three of you doing here? I thought you were supposed to be looking at this atmospheric anomaly out in the rocks, not coming to catch up with me.
We're here to review the security footage that captured the rogue vessel, commonly known as the ghost ship. We have probably the greatest knowledge of its stealth system in the galaxy, and we're hoping to see if we could find additional clues to its location. Miss Gladwell gave us permission to access the security footage under supervision.
That's funny. The last I checked, I was the head of public safety here, not Sydney Gladwell, and certainly not the four or three of you.
Well, you should take that up with your fellow counselor.
I think that maybe Mara might step in here and say, I think that we all provide due deference for you and all the hard work that you do here in your position. The last time we were all together, we kept Earth, Aventine, and the Verge from starting an all-out war. And perhaps I am banking on a little bit of goodwill. We are trying to figure out what is going on here, and we would be greatly appreciative if you would provide us access to your system.
I think at that, John, is Councilman Lawrence looking at anybody in particular or just making eye contact with Mara since she's the one talking?
I think he is looking at Mara because she is the last one to speak.
Councilman, let's not beat around the bush. Would it make you feel better if I was under your supervision while the rest of my party is under the supervision of Councilwoman Gladwell?
I think go ahead and roll manipulate, Arno.
Okay. A 7?
Okay.
7s get degrees.
So manipulate, when you use Promises, Gall, or Charm to manipulate someone is doing what you want, on a 7 to 9, they can choose one, which is either they make a counteroffer to be settled now before they do what you want, or they'll ask you to promise something and provide concrete assurance that you'll follow through and that they'll do what you want.
I am willing to surrender myself to his custody in exchange for letting the rest of the party review the tapes.
Yeah. So I think he looks at you and I think he says, You're correct, Lieutenant Hines, that you're at the top of my list of concern. But one of you spent the last 2 years working for Aventine's government as well. After what we discovered the last time you were all here, you can understand why I wouldn't be so eager to have you looking through our security system, Dr. Belova.
Counselor, we're here on behalf of the Interplanetary Council of Humanity. Are we to understand that Satis is not cooperating with the council? If it's not clear that I'm done with people who are, like, being assholes to us, I'm done with it. I'm, like, fundamentally uninterested in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, John.
It's a little Arno rubbing off on you.
You can understand whatever you'd like, Mr. Badock. That said, I'm loath to go against what another counselor promised to you. And so if you would like to review the footage, you may, but not these two.
I think Mara jumps in before Nasir could say anything and is like, I believe your concerns are reasonable given your position, though I do protest. Well, anyway, I believe that we will have a lovely, engaging conversation about the complexities of the mystery before us. I think Mara will just gesture for Nasir to go ahead, and hopefully he will.
I'll shrug and just keep and walk quiet without, like, I won't make a fuss.
I think Randall Lawrence just says, well, let's find somewhere to chat. Leela, at this point, I want to cut to you.
All right.
Initially, I think the camera is just fully obscured by a gray mist. But after a few seconds, we can see some movement. And as the mist slowly thins, we can see you, Leela, as you navigate the maze. How does Leela look in this shot? And by that, I don't just mean her physical appearance, but how is she moving through this space? Is it curious or nervous, or something else that we see from her?
I can answer that, but I'm also curious. In my mind, maybe the maze doesn't look exactly the way it did last time, and maybe it looks a little wilder or more overgrown.
Yeah. I mean, I might ask you more about that, but that, I think that makes sense.
I think that on one level, Leela expected this, or maybe feels like she should have expected this, but she's still, I think she's back in a place and a mindset from a few years ago. And I think she's trying to keep her cool and trying to stay under control, but there's like a little wildness in her eyes as it kind of really sinks in that she's back in this place.
So as you continue moving, I think we see the mist thin even further. And I think at that point, another difference from the last time you were in the maze is I think we can see the child next to you.
Okay.
They look to be around 8 years old with light brown skin, only a stubble of hair on their head, and flowy robes around their body. I described them as similar to what you had encountered on Eos, but these are far more plain in style than what you saw at the festival there.
Mm-hmm.
Before I get to your interactions with the child, though, you had said that the maze looked maybe more wild or overgrown than it did last time. And I want you to describe what we're seeing as you move through the maze, sort of what your navigation looks like. And then I also want to understand what it is that you're trying to do here.
So I think it's still a hedge maze, but where last time it maybe looked a little bit, you know, maybe a bit out of place or distorted or just not right, I think the objects themselves, like the plant life and everything still kind of looked in good condition. And I almost feel like it looks like time has passed, and it looks like the plants, like the bushes, are overgrown. I think I had mentioned there was like kind of statues or other like pieces of wall or other things scattered through. And I think they look like things are growing on them. Like, you know, again, like time has passed. And maybe it's even a little bit harder to find the exact path within the maze.
So I think that's right. And maybe the lightning that you saw, the kind of flashes of light that were out in the studio, aren't making their way into the maze. Maybe everything in the sky is kind of blocked out by the mist. It's like a, like there's a fog in the air in addition to it being on the ground. Mm-hmm. But I do think maybe, I don't think it's quite thunder. Maybe it's more like a tremor. I think every, maybe it's a few seconds, maybe it's a minute or two between them, but the ground kind of shakes a little bit beneath your feet.
Oh, that's inspiring confidence.
The one thing I'd asked that you hadn't answered yet is, what is it that you're trying to do in the maze? And so if you want to describe Leela's intentions here, what you're moving toward, then maybe we can take the scene from there.
I think Leela believes that the ghost ship is trying to help us or trying to warn us. And so the fact that it's reappeared is a concern. And she's hoping to understand now that she knows that the child is here. I think she's especially hoping to understand why this is happening again, because it's been like 3 years. I think Leela's other agenda here is an interest in genuinely trying to help Lena and to heal her the way that she helped Nadia.
One last question then. Is it you that's taking the lead as you move through the maze, or is Leela following the child?
I think Leela is trying to make her way through the maze, but I think it is, as I said, because it's more overgrown. Maybe she's not able to immediately find her way through it. And then maybe because the child is there, she's looking to the child for help.
So I think we see you moving down one of the sort of corridors in this hedge maze. And I think that the overgrowth that you described then, maybe it's kind of these thick vines that are coming out through the walls. And, you know, I think last time we had mentioned it was kind of a mix between the natural and the artificial, or kind of like a stone and plant life that makes up these borders in the maze. And I think maybe the walls therefore are kind of cracked from this. These vines are kind of extruding and making their way into the ground. I think you can kind of see, maybe it's not that you notice as you're looking at them, but maybe if you look away and turn back, it almost feels to you as if they're advancing or growing in real time. Like that the maze is getting more overgrown as you're making your way through it, as if the change is happening rapidly.
Yeah.
And I think you're trying to find your footing around this and moving your feet through the, again, through this kind of growth on the ground that's made its way across the path. But the child seems to be moving through it effortlessly. And maybe it's hard for you to tell looking at this, but it seems almost as if the child's just passing through the vines, as if that, you know, it's not a physical obstruction to them at all. I think as you're moving and again struggling to find your footing, maybe your breath is a little shallow because it's requiring some exertion to keep on your feet, but also continue moving through the maze and stay at pace. I think you hear the child say, "You were brave coming back here."
Thank you, I think.
The last time you came here, the events that followed it hurt you. And in any case, it always requires some courage when you go somewhere. but you don't know what you might find.
I think Leela nods and is kind of just focused on trying to keep pace and fight her way through the vines and the overgrowth. Why are you here? Why did you come back?
It's hard to answer your question when it's based on an incorrect assumption.
What's my incorrect assumption?
We've always been here. We never left.
We haven't seen trace of you for almost 3 years. What changed recently?
I think you still misunderstand me. As a species, your experience with this method of communication is limited. The last time you saw us, we were an echo left behind in the mind of your subject. But an impression like that isn't so limited. With this space here being similar to what you found in Nadia's mind, perhaps you're just filling in the gaps.
Are you also just an echo?
No more, no less than we were last time. Though in this case, we came here with you.
So I think Leela kind of looks up in surprise at that and says, so you don't know? You didn't cause what happened to Lena?
It's hard for us to say. After all, our memory, if you can call it that, only lasts up to the last time we encountered you.
Okay. Do you know what's wrong with Lena, then?
We can't be any more sure than you are, but it seems similar to what happened to Nadia, doesn't it?
I think Leela nods and says, yes, but I believe what happened to Nadia last time was due to a warning from you. Is this another warning? Has something changed? Something we should be aware of?
I think before I answer that question, I'd like you to roll into the abyss.
All right. Okay, so that's just an alien roll. All right, at the plus 3. Yeah, that's an nice. 11.
Woof.
Nice.
So into the abyss. When you stare unblinking into the abyss, looking for forbidden or forgotten knowledge, you can roll plus alien. On a 10 plus, you're shown dark visions that lend you insight. You can ask the abyss one question, the abyss will answer. But then I'll ask you one question from the abyss stares back. So you'd asked, is this another warning?
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you ask that, the child continues moving ahead through the maze, maybe picks up the pace a little bit and rounds a corner in the hedge. And I think as you turn behind them, you can see in the distance, kind of on a long straightaway, and there's several turns away from it, but you actually can see a light in the mist. It's almost just like an orb is what it looks like at that distance, but you're so far away that it's hard to tell if it's mm-hmm. you know, something like a disembodied floating light or a sign of something else to come. And I think the child begins moving toward the light and says,
this place, it looks different than it did last time, doesn't it?
Yes.
Maybe what caused it isn't the same then.
I thought it was different because I'm different.
More than one thing can be true.
And at this point, I'll ask you my question.
Cool.
What was your character's lowest moment?
And you can't just pick one of the times you were underground.
Shut up. Stop it.
I think while we were in the Verge, yes, there was time for contemplation and there was, you know, downtime in between the missions, but it still didn't feel, it just felt different. It was Leela's first time in the Verge, but I think it was more there was a mission and that there was a lot going on. both emotionally, politically. And I think despite what Leela did to Arno, to Aiden Kuros, to Ruby Watson, I don't think it really sank in for her until a few months after she was back on Earth. I think when Leela came back to Earth, she tried to just resume life and tried to go back into her habits and started doing art again, started working with Mickey again, though maybe not at full capacity. And I think there was just one day when it kind of hit her, the gravity of not just the, like, the geopolitical consequences or the what's bigger than geopolitical, the interstellar political consequences of what she had done, but also like the personal nature of what she did to Arno, someone she considered a friend, and to the other people that we saw in The Verge, but also the times she changed people's minds in the past as well. And I think it all kind of sank in for her. And that was, I think, a very low moment for her.
Astropolitical consequences.
So if that's Leela's lowest moment, how does it reflect itself in the maze?
I wonder if within the maze, yes, there are vines that have overgrown, but I wonder if there are also, like, if you look deeper, there are sections of maze that are just missing or maybe kind of crowded out by this new growth. And I think maybe it's just a symbol of the compartmentalization, the strict lines that used to be there have started to come down.
Do you see anything in these interruptions? You said it's just that the vines, the new growth, had kind of taken down part of the maze or broken through it. But does that reveal anything further? Or is it just an absence? And if so, like, what is it missing?
I think it's an absence. I think that it's showing that there's not so much rigidity, and that, like I said, I think, like, the kind of new growth of the vines has still taken over, so it's not like there's a completely open pathway there. There, it's still blocked off as part of the maze, but it's not so harsh, and it's more natural, and less planned, if that makes sense.
I guess, how does that make Leela feel when she sees it?
I think it's a symbol of what Leela's been working on since that low moment. I think it shows, it's evidence of what she has been trying to change about herself. I think before she was more comforted by the structure, and now I think it just feels more right to see the vines growing that way.
So I think you continue following the child down this straightaway and moving past these openings or tears in what used to be the maze. And I think that you can see the vines have a direction to them. And I mentioned that the growth was happening quickly, almost like you look away and then it's gone further than it had before. But as you're moving down this corridor, the vines are becoming thinner and thinner, and you can see the ends of some of these. And then when you look away again, they've gone a little further. And so it seems as if they're reaching out down this corridor, making their way toward the light that's at the end. Mm-hmm. And I think as you approach it, you can see that the light is coming from what looks like a lamp on a nightstand. But at this point, I want to cut away.
Hey everyone, it's Mo. Thank you so much for listening to Worlds Away. This game has been a blast to play and it has been wonderful to get to share the story with you. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far, you can help us out by spreading the word to friends and family. And if they are starting to get annoyed with the fact that you keep talking about us, that's okay. That means you're doing it right. You can also support us by giving us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform where you listen to podcasts. And if you want to give us a shout out on social media, you can find us on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod or online at worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the episode.
Mara and Arno, where do we think this conversation with Randall Lawrence is happening? Is it inside, like in his office, or is it somewhere outside the Office of Public Safety?
God, I almost imagine he took us to like an interrogation room, but I don't think he's that big of a dick.
That's where my head went initially. I kind of like the idea of his office, but I wonder if it's the same interrogation room where Ruby was held last time we were here.
Yeah, that is what I was kind of contemplating. But I don't think he's going that hard.
Well, let's say, like, I think that might mean something to Arno. I don't think it means shit to you. You've never seen that room. So does he want to play mind games or not?
Yeah, where does Randall take us? We've offered up a lot of options here.
Well, the only option I heard was, I guess I heard his office and the interrogation
office,
room, right?
Interrogation room somewhere. I guess third option. I don't know.
Let me
think. Or a cafe.
I hadn't really considered the interrogation room, if I'm being honest. So that went through me for a loop. So I have to think about this.
What are you going to do?
Putting it back in my court.
Your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Arno's personal hall already. So it's a cafe. There's a minimum purchase. Or else you can't be seated. They don't have water.
Nah, he's not that evil.
There's no tea.
No, this is the future.
What happened to the Cannelay place after the other guy got arrested?
That's a good question.
Oh, shit. Got a lot of good callbacks. Where's the alley where Mike shot that guy? Arno shot that guy. If we're just hitting all of our highlights.
The dumpster where the shirt came out of.
That's really on the both you. Of those are on the other side of the city, unfortunately.
Okay, now we got some options cooking.
I don't think he takes you to the interrogation room. I do think he takes you to his office, but I do think that he takes you deliberately, it seems, down a path that takes you right by it. And that I think the door is open so you can see into it. And I think he also takes you by the room where the four of you had met, the one where Nasira had punched you, Arno.
John, as we're passing by the interrogation room, I think Arno starts to tense up and he can feel the panic rising in his throat. Arno starts to soothe himself with the same sort of meditation that he used on the ship on the way over during the chess game with Nasir. And it all culminates with the sound of the waves again. And I think he's back.
I think maybe when you cut back from the waves, you're already in Randall Lawrence's office. I think he moves around his desk after gesturing you toward the two chairs in front of it. And aside from that description, I guess maybe I'll turn it to you. What do we think that his office looks like?
See, my head immediately goes to like this cluttered detective's office type situation with like paper strewn about. And I know that's not right for the setting.
I don't think it's right.
Right, because paper's very Aventine. Opposite. But I'm wondering, what's the equivalent of that for like a security official here?
I also think, and I think I'd invert that a little bit. I don't think Randall Lawrence is a person of clutter. I think it's almost like neurotically organized. Like the slates are all in order on like, maybe he has like a shelf, like a rack of slates. And maybe to the extent that there's some on his desk, like one on his, like on the surface of his desk, it's in a corner square to the edges. So it's like the exact distance from the corner of the desk is the same on both sides of it. And I do think if there's one other thing I can add with that, I think it's the, I'd mentioned that this building had a diagonal wall almost that looks out into the city, like a glass wall that's at an angle. And I think a large part of that, it's like floor to ceiling on the wall that's to your right, right? So if you're sitting in facing his desk, the whole right side is this diagonal angled in toward you wall that looks out to the city.
I think, I go to take a seat and I look at Randall Lawrence and I say, if you'd like, I'd put on a pair of handcuffs to keep me attached to the chair.
I don't think that will be necessary, Lieutenant.
It's just Mr. Hines. I'm consulting now.
Interesting. I guess the fleet won't be as ready to get you out of trouble then this time.
No, I'm on my best behavior.
I think he sits down in his chair and kind of leans forward onto the desk and has his hands crossed, but then sits back upright and says, well, I am curious about the nature of your consulting. The council, your interplanetary council, was unusually tight-lipped about this mission of yours. Do you think that we could speak candidly about that for a moment, just the three of us?
I don't see why not.
Well, given that we, the players, don't know shit. Yeah, I suppose we can.
I'm sure that our interplanetary council wouldn't mind.
This thing out in the rocks. I think he looks to Mora and then looks back to you, Arno. It's Aventine, isn't it?
Most likely not. However, we are here to rule that out. Rule out every possibility, every avenue, every shady collective, freedom fighters, loyalists, until we get to the truth.
It's just interesting, you see. The vote on the future of this planet, on the future of the Verge, is just months away now. I'm not such a believer in coincidence that something like this would just show up now of all times, just randomly. And with all due respect to the shady collectives of the Verge, if it wasn't Aventine, I'm just not sure who. And I think he pauses for a second and then turns to Yorno and says, their whole bait and switch with the empty weapons stockpiles, their claim that they were never preparing for another war, I don't believe that for a second. You wouldn't have announced what they were doing publicly if you didn't have evidence. Everything that occurred surrounding the treaty, they wanted it to happen. And with what we found them doing here, and he kind of looks back to you, Mara, I just don't see them suddenly changing their ways and turning all of their attention toward peace.
You left out an important detail, Counselor. At that same press conference, I also announced that the Republic was stockpiling as well. None of us believed in the last piece. I hope this one is more successful.
You did reveal that as well. No denying that. Despite the disadvantage to the Republic, if a war came, the disadvantage to us. But those weapons were confiscated or destroyed as part of the armistice. Aventine's stockpiles unexpectedly empty. How do you explain that?
Damn, Randall Lawrence really sees the strings.
Can I ask you something? Honestly?
I think he just gestures toward you as if to proceed.
What would it take for me to convince you that what I'm about to say is the truth?
That's a difficult question to answer before I hear what you're going to say.
I know, but our time is limited, and I really don't have enough to be wasting on wild goose chases. I don't know what's going on or who's playing us and why we're going from planet to planet across this system searching for something that we only know as the ghost ship. And I was derailed the last time I was on this thing's trail. I've done nothing for the last 3 years except try to track this thing down, and I find it here on your planet. And so I'm sitting in an office across from somebody who I'm sure doesn't want me anywhere near this investigation, because I need to know who's playing us now the same way I needed to know the last time I was here who was playing us then. And I don't think either of us got satisfactory answers to that question.
Speaking of, where is Hermione Sling?
Hmm.
Hermie.
Not in this room.
Dead. Didn't you hear?
Got.
If it's Aventine, it's Aventine. If it's Earth, it's Earth. If it's something else, it's something else. But damn it, I'm going to find out.
So I kind of want you to roll something. I'm trying to think of what, though. And I think the reason I want you to roll is it's not because of what you said about the ghost ship or the anomaly, but it's what you implied about what happened last time. And I'm trying to think about what that would convince him of. And I do feel like it's manipulate, but I did just have you roll manipulate, but I don't know if there's another move that either you have or that you think is more appropriate here. It doesn't strike me as intimidate. I'll put it that way.
No,
it
doesn't.
You're intimidating him.
I don't think I am. Is he of my culture?
Oh, shit. See the tribe? Vibe check.
I think so. But, I mean, is this about using...
War Eternal. You come from a culture that has been embroiled in a bitter internal conflict for generations. When you encounter someone from your culture, you will immediately know which force they are from and how you can push at them to gain support or lose their cool. You have advantage when you intimidate or manipulate them.
Law and Order tribe?
Yeah, you know what? I'll give it to you. I think go ahead and you can roll manipulate still, but you can do so with advantage.
With advantage.
That's a 12.
11. 12?
I believe that's a very high number.
Me likey.
By my calculations, that's big.
Huge.
Mm-mm. Very big.
No, big, no,
big
Many
fucking deal.
People are saying.
No.
I think he looks at you, Arno, and says, you have to recognize that you're the last person in the galaxy that I should trust sitting in my office, don't you?
I'm sorry, the literal last?
I don't expect you to trust me at all.
Give the man a chance to say second to last.
I think he looks at you, Mar, and says, certainly low on my list. But you're right. Something about last time did leave me feeling uneasy about the resolution. Like something was too clean.
Are you more afraid of Earth or Aventine?
I think he's like genuinely confused about it. And he says, why would I be afraid of Earth?
Well, as we just discussed, they were hoarding weapons all over the Verge. They were fighting on your side, sure, but many of your citizens may have died in the conflict, and Earth was prepared to pull the trigger.
It's worth noting, I think, for us, that if I recall correctly, this man's a hawk.
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, actually, like, pro-Earth... using military force to like to hold the Verge.
That's fair. I'm just wondering where he's at now. Like, I'm trying to.
Yeah. I think he says, you're right that war is bad for the Verge and especially would be bad for us. But the belief that Aventine wouldn't honor the vote was at worst a well-educated guess. Being prepared for what would come next wasn't warmongering. It was prudence.
I don't disagree with you. I think that you are right to be skeptical of us. That's fair. I'm skeptical of everyone. Right now, they're calling it an anomaly. I don't know what exactly you've told your people. I don't know what anyone out there is saying in the Verge. I don't really know what they're saying on Earth and truly on Aventine. I'm skeptical of everyone. I'm suspicious of everyone. Coming out here to the Verge the first time fundamentally changed who I am and how I see our universe. One thing that hasn't changed about me, however, is when I encounter a problem, I solve it. Regardless of bias or expectation. And I think she looks over at Arno. We're here to get to the bottom of whatever person, whatever thing created what harmed your people and could devastate the fragile peace that we have.
So I think when you say thing, he gets a kind of confused look for a second, but it quickly passes. He just kind of, I think you can tell, assumed it was a manner of speech. And I think he says, in terms of what I told my people or what we've disclosed, as the council requested, we've kept this information confidential. However, even if I do go along with you and keep an open mind, it's only a matter of time before people start making assumptions.
That's the clock we're running against. We want to know the truth before someone out there seizes this as an opportunity to cause more chaos.
Where do we find Nasir?
I mean, I think I said I was going to look at the security footage, so I'm probably in the room where we reviewed the security footage last time with whoever is the new Sydney Gladwell, like whoever is the new executive assistant to the council, observing.
I mean, I think last time is Mara that looked at the footage, and there was one of the officers from the Office of Public Safety was with her. I wonder if it's the same person. I think maybe it is, because that'll make it easy on me.
Great.
I think the person who was monitoring or kind of assisting Mara, she was doing it last time, was named Molly Hill. I think she's a taller woman with pale skin, red hair. I think it's kind of tied back very tight. I think that you just see her standing there, though. Last time she was kind of assisting Mara and going through the footage, like she was sitting at the desk handling the controls. I think that, though, Nasir, you've maybe sort of fully taken over and are kind of trying to put your own spin on this at this point. What exactly is Nasir trying to do?
I am trying to... I helped Charlie with the stealth system tech in, like, initial testing and refinement. And I think other than them, I understand this stealth tech better than probably anybody. And so I am trying to, using what I understand about the way that it cloaks a ship, see if I can like retroactively apply some sort of filter that would make the ship visible on these recordings. Especially like if it would had passed through them.
Like cut through the stealth system, essentially, or see through the stealth system.
Reverse the effect of the stealth system.
Yeah. We created the stealth system based on footage of the stealth system in the first place. And I'm trying to see, since we already reverse engineered it, can we just engineer the recording technology now? Reverse engineer.
So I'm going to have some more questions about maybe the whole scenario, how we came to this point. But what does it look like as you're doing this? Like, what do we see in Nasir, and maybe what's the experience looking like as you're trying to do this?
I think that I have two monitors up, which for Nasir is twice as many monitors as he's ever needed for anything. And I'm sort of typing frantically. One of the monitors just has... like video footage that's got, I think in the same way that if you had like an audio recording, we have layers. I think video recording in the future is like much more advanced than our current video technology. And so I think that there are layers in ways that like I would struggle to describe. I think that you've probably got like a heat layer or like a real-time 3D mapping is probably, video recording is probably capable of doing. So one of them just looks like very data-heavy recording. And on the other screen is just me playing with what kind of looks like an audio mixer now. But I'm trying to like create new filters or like, you know, program something new that this thing hasn't had before. And I think that like... I look very frustrated and my brow is furrowed because despite having an engineering expertise, I am not Mara and I am not just good at everything that has to do with the science, capital S.
I took that skill,
T,
yeah.
Capital S, yeah. And I'm just sort of muttering to myself, oh, Charlie, I really wish you were here. And fiddling with things.
So I guess my question then is this setup or what you're dealing with now, is this something that you experienced before with Charlie? And if so, when was that?
So yes and no. I think that with Charlie developed the original stealth system and showed it to me. And I think we actually saw that.
Mm-hmm.
But between when Charlie developed the stealth system and when we deployed it, I think we had some tests. So this is between the Lua arc and the Kairos arc. And I think, no, it didn't look like this, right? If I was helping Charlie, I was helping Charlie with the hardware. And this is very much like a software adjacent task. And I think that even after the Kairos arc, Charlie and I probably would have talked about this and the tech of the ghost ship up until they were hurt. And I think that we have kept in touch in the years since the peace summit, but I don't think that we're really in a place where, I don't think they're really in a place where they would have been able to help with something like this. Like, I don't think I'm doing something I've done many times before. I think that I am ad-libbing a thing based on a thing that I did.
Mm.
And this is like two steps adjacent from that. There's a lot of on-the-fly work happening right here.
I'm just trying to think. I know that you and I discussed this, and I had said I didn't want to do this, but I'm wondering if I want to now surprise flashback.
Do the
you
flashback?
Yeah!
I told you I had a surprise flashback.
What the fuck is going on?
It was a surprise to everyone, even John.
I did say out loud that we were going to surprise flashback here.
Yeah.
Called my shot.
Mo really called his shot. Fuck.
Yeah.
It's just like, so John can never resist a good dramatic storyline. And
so I guess, where was this moment with this time with Charlie that you were referring to?
Do you want the one before Kairos, the one after Kairos but before the end, or the one since the summit?
I think it's before the summit. I think it's,
so we're gonna I love this, we're flashing back to something that was during the campaign,
the actual campaign. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
That we didn't see. Yeah. I think it's before the summit. I'll leave it up to you if it's before or after Kairos.
I think it is after Kairos.
So it's like the first field data.
On Kairos, the stealth system failed. It succeeded at first, but then there was a failure blip.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had like a field test that proved we could do some silent running, but that there were flaws in our stealth system. And I think, especially because we had like multiple weeks where we were setting up for the summit before delegates arrived, that's where Charlie and I perfected the stealth system and worked on the stealth system ahead of the mission on Aventine 2B.
And like, you knew at that point that you were going to have to do the mission to Aventine, right? So it's like, you knew that you were going to have to do this thing that would have been dangerous. Yeah.
And we had the field data. So I think, where did it take place? It took place in the Republic hangar, by and large. And I think that a lot of our mechanic work took place in the hangar. But if I can have some creative license, oh merciful DM, I think that we would have at some point during those 2 weeks had to do a field test. And we could not do that on Ascension Station.
Oh, man. Okay, this is a real surprise. Now I'm fully surprised flashbacked, but we're inventing like new arcs of the campaign that we hadn't played.
It wasn't an arc. It was just like a little test run.
Was Mara at the beach?
Yeah, it was a beach episode.
Lila was having coffee.
I mean, I don't, it probably isn't any, I don't know if there are any systems closer than Lucina to Ascension Station. I don't think we were doing it on like a populated planet. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Well, I think, and I think that there were a lot of places to go, right? That's not just not that are habitable planets, right? The things that are on the map that I've shared with you, those are only the habitable planets of the Verge.
I think that we went on a surfaceable but not habitable planet that was like less than a day's run from Ascension Station, so that like we could go and spend a day doing testing and come back. And I think that we probably did this two or three times to test and perfect the stealth system.
Was it like just the two of you, or were there other people on the ship? What's the minimum crew to staff the Valiant under this kind of flight?
I mean, I think minimum we would need four people to staff the thing. And we've established that I can handle the nav and Charlie can handle the engines. So we would have needed a pilot. And I think that that's Lieutenant Rye. And I think regs probably require like a fourth person in case someone goes down somewhere. Because it is technically a Republic fleet vessel. We have to meet like some standard of regulation and redundancy. Also, if I'm being honest, I don't think Captain Alba would let us would let Charlie and I fuck off without supervision. And I think Lieutenant Davis and Lieutenant Rye would count as supervision for the two of us.
Poor Davis. Poor Rye.
So I can't remember if we addressed this explicitly or not, but do you think that you told Charlie then that you were planning to go to Aventine or that you had this mission? Like, maybe not with all of the detail in the world, but, you know, do they know that you're planning something and that's why you need the stealth system? Or, like, what's their knowledge level here?
I think after I came clean to Charlie, I said no more secrets, and I meant no more secrets.
Mm.
They were someone who was very important to me.
I wonder if it's even after the delegates arrive, you had to sneak away for a little bit to do this final test. Maybe this is like right before Captain Alba assembled the crew, the volunteers.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I guess you two knew, but nobody else does. What does that look like, I guess, as you're working on this?
So I think we're in vac suits and we are on the surface of a planet that is mossy. I think it's like we're on like a cliffside of a rocky, very mossy terrain. And Davis and Rye are like stationed on either side of the Valiant in their vac suits, weapons drawn.
Mm-hmm.
Like protecting us, you know what I mean? We're the nerds, they're the jocks. They're making sure this goes well. And I'm under the ship working on a piece of the stealth system, like physically adjust, like welding something on a piece of the stealth system as Charlie types away on a data pad.
I think maybe if you're down there welding or you're trying to like work on this, I think they say, I'm telling you, Nasir, there has to be something down there. I've checked this code 20, 25 times now. And let's face it, it's not like you've taken the best care of the ship.
Oof.
I haven't taken the best care of the ship. And you just, you hear a, as I hit my head, as I try to sit up quickly. Charlie, there is nothing wrong with the stealth system mechanically. Hold on. And you just hear me start welding again. And then I poke out from under the ship. Now there's nothing wrong with the stealth system mechanically.
I think they sigh and say, all right, let's try it again then. Attempt number 36.
I think honestly, we just have a remote start from their data pad.
Yeah.
And when they click the button, the stealth system goes away, or the stealth system activates and the ship goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And we leave it running and I pull out a sensor and infrared scanning, visual assessment, thermal imaging. And I just go through like a set of scans to try to find it. I think Charlie sees something and tells me to go back.
I think maybe you're like scanning and they're it's set up to, you know, you mentioned they were on their slate, right? I think it's, and maybe it's like a big slate. It's like, you know, we describe these things as being various sizes, from kind of a phone to like a tablet. And this is like a big one, right? It's almost like a two-hander. And I think that the data is streaming to their slate and they're like, wait, no, there's still something wrong. Go back.
I'll flip back. Which one? The real-time mapping or the hyperspectral?
Hyperspectral. Still some shortwave near the engine cowling.
Will they be able to pick it up from planet side if we're not as close as I am now with a handheld scanner?
Do you really think that that's the standard we should be going for when you're about to do... And I think they kind of just trail off.
I'll see what I can figure out. And I will crawl back under the ship.
Yeah.
Any ideas?
I think they say... I'll check the code again, but... Nasir, I don't... What if this isn't ready? What if this doesn't work?
We cannot be certain that anything we're going to do is going to succeed. We're the best the galaxy has. So we have to do the best we can.
I think when you say that, they kind of... It's not like a frown, but it's a slight downward curl of their mouth. And I think they kind of blink their eyes and say... Nasir, why did you want to become an engineer?
I grew up by the pyramids, Charlie. I saw what we were capable of thousands of years ago. And I couldn't help but think about what humanity could accomplish now if we were working together.
For me, it was always the puzzle. Any machine, there's always something else you can figure out. But since this mission started, since this project, I guess I didn't realize what the stakes were before. Not really. I just... If something went wrong out there and someone got hurt, how would I be able to live with that?
You have to make sure that you do the best you can now, Charlie. Because if things go wrong... The voice telling you it's all your fault is going to be loud. I can tell you that from experience. And if you can't say you did everything you could, it's a lot harder. I can tell you that from experience too. But you keep moving. Because what we have to offer humanity is a lot more than what we offer in any given moment. Especially you.
I think they look at you and say, I thought you were supposed to be good at making people feel better, Nasir.
Damn, Charlie. Never mind, you deserve to get exploded.
And I thought you were supposed to design a stealth system that didn't fail on us.
Oh, shit!
Get him! Get him!
Douche!
I think they laugh at that. And then I think it's almost like they're kind of mid-laughter and then they stop abruptly and look down and then you see them start frantically typing on the slate and they say, try now. At this point, I think we're back at the desk. And I want you to go ahead and roll for what you're attempting to do with the footage. And
which is a...
I mean, I think the move would be scope it out if you're using the basic moves, but I didn't know if you had a playbook move that could help you here. Might not.
I don't think this is when you encounter a strange new environment or life form.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I do. Should have
cleared the dice. Is that you or is that Mike?
It's me.
No, that's not me.
Oh, yeah. It's Lauren? Okay. All right. Thank God.
It was too crunches.
How dare you?
I was like, Mo, if you're chewing mid speaking, that's insane, dog. Is that
a
four?
A five.
A five.
It's a five. Mm. I level up.
Who has turbo tokens?
We are so bad at rolling in this facility. Like, I failed,
I got a 12.
Haley failed, Arno got punched. Like, this place is cursed. I never want to come here again.
I don't think I failed. I think I got a mixed success.
Whoopee. That doesn't help my five.
That's fail for the early part of the campaign, I'd like to remind you.
That's true. That is a Leela. We did call that a Leela fail in the beginning.
Yeah. A tonal fail. Fail for the plot.
I also would like to make a request to hold my level up until the end of the episode.
Like to hold saying what it is?
No, to hold picking it.
Okay. We'll do mark XP.
I cleared my XP track. I got a level up to do.
Let me ask this then. You said that like you didn't think that Charlie would be able to help you now because of what happened. Like, how bad do you think it is? I mean, so they were floating in like vacuum for an extended period of time, right? They weren't breathing.
I think that they have severely impaired motor function. And I think their cognitive function. I think they have good days and bad days.
I think here's what happens. I think you're scrubbing through the footage, and I think that you don't see any sign of the ghost ship in any of the, like, you're looking through hours and hours of footage, right? And maybe there's like an automated thing, right? You're not going to like manually go and look through all this footage yourself, like with your eyes, right? That's not the way that you would do this in, you know, 2278 now, right? I think that the footage is kind of going through and you can see it, maybe like images flashing up and it's like doing a comparison, right? And it only returns one file. And you go to open that file and it's the same footage that you were shown in your briefing, right? This one shot of the ghost ship moving away. And I think it's moving across the frame, going left to right and kind of getting further away into the distance. Let me ask you this before I get to what happens next, though. When you left the cave, did you like connect your slates to the equipment in the cave or set up any way to monitor the anomaly? Or did you just kind of leave that to Dr. Sun?
Oh, I think I set up connected to it.
What about Mara and Arno?
I mean, I think we have some sort of chain system going on here where alert for one is an alert for all.
And I think I was the one who scanned it, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, only there was like a group text of some sort.
Yeah. So maybe if you did the scanner, you connected that to send you alerts. I'll get back to that in a second. I think, though, you're looking at the footage and maybe you're jogging is what we would say in the editing business, right? You're kind of moving back and forth between the last few frames. And I think you see something. Like, we just see a shape. Like, it's like 5 pixels wide. Enter the side of the frame. But at this point, I want to cut back to Leela. As you approach this lamp, I think the mist is fading away. And I think you see other objects start to materialize. And they're kind of, the mist is moving in and out in front of them. It's like obscuring your vision intermittently. But it's also these objects themselves are kind of moving in and out of existence at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think what begins to take shape around you, though, is a childhood bedroom.
Okay.
There are wood walls. There's a small window that's kind of fading in and out of the mist. There's this end table with a lamp on it. I think there's some bright colors on the shade. And in the middle of the room is a twin bed with a red blanket on top of it. There's a metal head and footboard kind of with this, I guess, filigree pattern where the metal is shaped into a kind of overlapping arches. And I think the bed, I mean, again, you can tell this is like a twin size bed, like something that would be appropriate for a child in its proportions, but everything is kind of scaled up in size. So it looks like it could fit an adult's body comfortably now. And in fact, like maybe it's like oversized in that sense, and that an adult would be the size of a child would have been in the bed. And lying in that, you see Leena Dallin, who again has this thin, short blonde hair, but now is less pale than you remember her from the hospital room. And also mm-hmm. she has none of the bruising that you had seen on the left side of her face.
Okay. And the lamp on the nightstand is the only thing lighting this room?
Correct. It almost seems like the room itself, like the light that is illuminating the room, and also the room itself is kind of radiating out from that central point.
Okay.
That's like almost casting this illusion into the mist. But as you step forward, I think maybe you hear something and mm-hmm. you look back, and I mean, the vines are still advancing.
I think Leela steps up to the bed and kind of glances around. I think she takes in that the vines are kind of coming in. And so I think it's clear that she has to work a little quickly here. She doesn't have infinite time. I think she looks down at Lena on the bed, and I'm curious, what kind of look does Lena have on her face? Does she seem stressed? Does she seem calm?
I think it's just totally neutral.
Okay. So I think seeing that, Leela kind of takes a deep breath and then stretches out her hand towards Lena's hand resting on the bed. And I think at this point, I would like to use my new move, Flesh Knitter.
I'm now realizing that doing it in this way, you know, it's almost like, I don't want to say Inception because I feel bad about that, but it's like you are kind of using the technique inside the technique, right?
Well, maybe. Maybe so.
Yeah, so go ahead and what's Flesh Knitter?
So Flesh Knitter, I believe I get this once per arc. When you focus your mind on a living thing's injuries or illness, discharge this move and roll plus alien. On a 10 plus, you may use your power to heal a wound or physical injury, condition, or malady. On 7 to 9, heal them, but it drains you. You have disadvantage going forward.
I think it's, if you're talking about the discharge, I think it's more than once an arc. I think it's once per sequence or scene, right? So,
okay.
You know, maybe it's only one time inside this, inside the maze, right? Inside the landscape, but I think you could use it again if needed.
Okay.
But yeah, so I guess go ahead and roll plus alien and we'll see what happens.
All right. Oh, that's a 6.
We're Let's leave so this place. Good tonight. Let's go. I'm done.
Satis hates us canonically. Yeah.
This is the second time you guys have kind of bombed down a Satis arc.
Yeah,
I rolled a 12.
Yes.
I rolled an 11 earlier.
You could have more efficiently allocated those numbers. I'm those just rolls. Saying.
Action.
Yeah, can I take one from my 11 and
can we crack?
Put it here?
Yeah, let's gerrymander this roll.
I don't think so, unfortunately. Well, all right. Go ahead and mark XP, Leela.
I think Haley's going to mark a stress.
So before I get to what happens, like what, you know, you touch her hand, what happens next? What's Leela doing when she tries to heal this malady or condition?
So I think this skill is something that Leela's been working on more recently. I think it kind of leans more on the wooier side of what Leela thinks she's capable of. It's definitely not part of Sato Institute orthodoxy to believe that you can essentially like convince someone that they are less injured than they are. So I think it's something that she's been exploring, but I think there's a hesitance to what she's doing because it's almost like the first time she did it, she had no idea what she was doing with Nadia. And now this is something that she hasn't really attempted since, and everything she's done in the intervening time has been much less complicated. So I think maybe there's just a hesitation to what she's doing.
I think if that's the case, maybe that reflects in you moving a little slowly or cautiously. And I think you're just beginning to feel your mind reach out into Lena's. And I think you see someone running toward you. Like, that's the image that you see as you let your consciousness reach out to hers. But I think then you feel something, like, in your body, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you snap away because I think you feel one of the vines going up and reaching around your left ankle. And I think you snap away from her hand and you knock the lamp over on the nightstand.
Hmm.
And I think the bulb breaks and the light flickers out with a electric arc.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, the bed and everything around it disappears. And I think the space around you begins to fill again with the mist. Mara and Arno, I think after the conversation with Randall Lawrence, he, you know, maybe in a newfound level of trust has kind of cut you loose. I don't think that you're at liberty to go into the back office, like where Nasir is working, but I think he let you kind of go up toward the front of the Office of Public Safety, like the waiting area or any kind of public space. And yeah, maybe there's these long hallways that are running against the that diagonal glass wall I mentioned. He doesn't send you back through the hall with the interrogation room.
Makes sense.
Do we see any conversation between the two of you at this point? Or what are we kind of seeing you two doing after the discussion with Randall Lawrence?
I think that as they walk away, I feel like that was kind of a heavy encounter. And it's like we're really back in it, right? This feels like
the good old days.
Yeah. Everyone being suspicious of us, like us being on a clandestine mission, cosmic forces.
We back, baby.
Yeah, it feels kind of crazy. But I do think one thing has changed. And I think Mara goes, oh, you're here now. And pulls out of her pocket a sailing knot that she's been practicing. And she says, appraise my handiwork, please.
Can I ask which knot it is?
I have a list of knots in front of me, but that has been offered up to Michael.
I
I didn't tell him I was going to do this. This is my flashback.
Surprise flashback. Surprise,
Shoddy.
It's a surprise flash now.
Yeah. You've been flashed.
Well.
Give me a second.
10. 9.
No, I'm not playing like that.
Boots.
I'm not playing like that. It was the most toddler thing to come out of your mouth. I love it.
Okay, yeah. I'll take a look at this. And so we see a pretty complicated weave, it almost looks like. And this is a chain splice knot. It's actually two separate pieces of rope normally that you would use to do this. And I think you even use two different colors so I could see your handiwork over here and more easily identify it. Mm-hmm. And usually you would tie this around something. So I'm going to assume that you just have like a carabiner or something like that, that you've like looped this around, or even just like a metal ring or something to that effect. But
you got it.
I'm looking at this and you've been practicing. This is
much
good.
Much improved. Yes. Yes, I agree.
You know, if this whole scientist thing doesn't work for you, we could always use a spare set of hands over at the harbor.
I'm thinking about what my retirement plan looks like, and it doesn't sound too bad. I think she takes it out of your hands, and because she's a weirdo, she like smells it.
I love like, Mara being a weirdo. I love Mara being a weirdo.
I don't want to question your process.
Can I ask a weirdo question?
Sure.
What kind of rope is it? What's it? What's the material?
I don't fucking rope, dude. Hemp? I don't know what you want. Like, what were you expecting, actually?
Hemp is a perfectly acceptable Nylon. Answer. I wasn't expecting. Nylon's also an acceptable answer.
I think that. So she smells it, right? She's like, it's been so long since I've been back to Earth. Been so long since I've seen the sea. But I'm glad to hear I'm improving. I'll start as an apprentice.
as a, I'm sorry, the only word I can think of is seaman, but that can't possibly be correct. Anyway, the mission, what are we should find Nasir?
He'll, I'm sure, message us when he's done and ready. This is the part where we wait for the scout team to return. You just have to be patient and ready. Coffee?
That depends.
On?
If it's sufficiently terrible to my tastes, I'm not accepting questions.
I think at that point, your slates both go off. And I think you get a message from the scanner and the analysis that Nasir set up regarding the anomaly. And I think what the message is that it appears to be changing in size.
Yep.
But I think that we cut back to Nasir, and I think we see the slate on the table, like on the desk where the computer is, and I think we can see like the light is indicating on it. But I don't think you noticed this, Nasir, because you are transfixed by what you're seeing on the screen. And I think you're jogging the frames forward and backward, because on the screen you see an object that didn't appear before you attempted the modifications, before you installed the code that you did. But that object is not the ghost ship. And at this point, I want to cut back to Leela.
Oh my god.
Back in the maze, Leela, the mist has now risen up to your chest, with wisps of it floating up to your face and blocking your vision every couple of seconds. And at this point, I think you've lost any sight of the child.
I think Leela's looking around, trying not to be too frantic, but definitely just whipping around in all directions, seeing the mist crawling up, and I think she's starting to lose it.
I think if that's the case, and maybe the motion that you're doing is flailing, right? I think you are sort of pushing pieces of the mist away. It almost is like more physical or tangible than you would expect for something that's kind of floating in the air around you, right? You're like pushing large chunks of it out of your way with your hands. And I think you can begin to see as it clears in front of you on the ground, instead of the vines that you saw before, there's a dark reflective surface. It's almost like the night as seen on completely still water.
Mm.
Back on the screen, Nasir, you see an object moving into the frame that's maybe 1.5 times the size of what you've described as the ghost ship. But while that was a dark gray in color, what you're seeing now is nearly pitch black. It's the same color as the darkness at the center of the anomaly. But this object that you're seeing still has 2 sets of wings. And in the 3 frames that you can see it, it is still moving across the frame from left to right. But in the maze, Leela, maybe 20 feet ahead of you, standing on this dark reflective surface, you can see the monster. The same one that you saw in Nadia's mind. The one you saw where the child was standing after you fell at the tower. It's tall, about 7 feet in height. It has 6 tentacle-like arms curled around from its back. And on its face, there are 2 solid white-gray eyes, a pair of slits instead of a nose, and below that, it has no mouth at all. What do you do?
I pull out my gun and...
and I shoot the fucker. Pow, pow. America.
Can you remind me what happened with the monster last time I saw it, like in the last moments, or
after the sequence at the tower? You saw the child standing in an open room with this, again, kind of similar dark reflective surface, and then it was replaced by the monster, and that was the last thing you saw then before you appeared in the maze.
I see.
I think in this, I don't even know if it's fair to call it the landscape anymore, but I don't think regular physical rules really feel like they apply. So, you know, I'm not even going to try to consider like, oh, do I try to run around it? Or, you know, it's just, it's there. It's the thing that's in front of me. There's nothing physical I can do in this space that will, I think, let me avoid it. I think I have to kind of face it head on. So I guess my question is, does it look like, I was going to ask if it looked threatening, but I think like I can answer yes. Does it seem like it's advancing on me? Does it seem like it notices me?
Well, let me ask you this then before I answer that question. So you're kind of pausing to see what it does next?
Yeah, I think Leela's kind of frozen. I don't think that she even thinks about running away or something like that.
I think if that's what happens, it looks toward you and maybe it kind of tilts its head like 3 degrees at an angle. And then with incredible speed, it lunges at you to strike.